Hello, listener, and welcome to episode 73 of Good Copy, Bad Copy, the B2B copywriting podcast. This month, we're looking at how to check your content quality, what great content looks like, and how you can spot and fix problems, as well as how to get the best feedback from your stakeholders. My name's David Maguire. I'm Creative Director at Radix Communications, and I'm joined by our CEO, Fiona Campbell-Howes.
Hello.
Hi, Fiona. How are you feeling?
I'm feeling better now, thank you.
Listener, this is our second attempt at recording this podcast. Our usual podcast bunker has been overpowered by fumes.
Some kind of strange solvent in the building.
Yes, there is maintenance work happening. And the previous recording started getting quite surreal. So if you are, I won't say eagle-eared, but if you're listening closely, you can probably tell that we acoustically are not in our normal place, and there will probably be sirens passing and all sorts on the main road
just
next to us.
All the drama of Commercial Road, Penryn, yes.
Yes, all the drama of, you know, gritty urban Cornwall.
That's right.
Listener, we've no interview for you this month. Instead, though, we're going to take you point by point through our 15 questions that we ask when we're reviewing content. And that will give you our exact formula for quality copy. We promise we're not going to pull any punches. So if you have any questions or comments or things you might change, we really want to hear them. Email us at podcast@radix-communications.com or tweet us at radixcom. That's RADIXCOM. Since January, we've been trialling a 15-point quality checklist to standardise our internal review process. We've put about, 140 pieces, you were saying now, Fiona?
At least 140, yes. Yep.
Wow, so about 140-plus pieces of content through the process. Fiona, could you give us a quick overview of why we're doing that?
Yes, well, I mean, lots of reasons, really. So the first one is that we want to produce great quality work. Mm-hmm. You know, that's our mission statement.
Yes.
I think, do great work.
It is. And,
you know, before this, we didn't really have a kind of objective way of measuring whether we thought the work that we were producing is great work or not. You know, we've got 11 different writers, and all of those writers are also reviewing other people's work and proofing other people's work. And, you know, there were some certain subjective opinions about what constituted good copy and good content.
Yeah, I mean, we're reviewing each other's work. We're not reviewing other people's work from out on the street.
Each other's work, yes. Among the team of 11, yes. We're not, like, randomly reviewing people's work, no.
Just open a magazine or look at people's websites. Dear sir or madam.
Although that's how I read everything now. I don't know if you find the same.
You just
every time I read anything, I'm just like sort of like reviewing it. According to our 15-point checklist.
I go on the London Underground and I review in my head all of the adverts on the tube.
Yeah.
It's like my favourite hobby when I visit London.
Once an editor, always an editor.
Sorry,
gone off the point. I think, you know, over the years we've built up a view of what constitutes quality writing and quality content. We've been able to quantify that, I guess. I think you started it off with your hierarchy of copywriting greatness. I don't think that's its actual name.
that would be better. The hierarchy of copywriting competences, which is like based on Maslow's hierarchy of needs, which is just sort of five things that I felt every piece of B2B writing needed to have if it was going to succeed.
Yeah, absolutely. And so we took those five things and we really thought about, well, what would be the test for each of those five things? And we came up with three questions for each one. So hence, we now have a 15-point quality checklist.
And has that delivered what we hoped it would?
It's delivered more than we hoped, I think. We thought we would get a good view of the quality of the work that we were producing. But what it's done is it's given us loads of really granular data. So, for example, you know, writer by writer, you know, our poor writers, it's like going back to school for them. So they get marked. Every piece of writing they do gets marked out of 15.
Well, we get marked too. We're not excluded from this process.
Yes, we are not. We're all in the process. But what you can do is you can see sort of writer by writer where their strengths are, and, you know, if they're sort of failing the same test over and over again of these 15, then, you know, you can focus training and mentoring in that direction. So it's helping the whole team to develop.
And I think it's delivered some things that we maybe hadn't thought about initially, like how much better it is for, when I say our writers, but us as writers as well, to know absolutely what you're going to be marked against, what, you know, what the person reviewing your writing will be looking for, to have that in mind point by point as you're writing, you know, it helps to keep you really focused, I think. I don't know if you found that.
Yeah, definitely. And I think it's helped maybe all of us to produce better first drafts, you know, if we know exactly what they're going to be reviewed on. And I have to say, it's also helped me as a reviewer, because I've never been very good at reviewing other people's work, because I'll just see a sentence thing and I don't like that sentence, but I can't really explain why I don't like it. And then I'll just change everything, or I used to just change everything. I'd just write it the way I would have written it. And now with this 15-point checklist, you can see, you know, you can see, like, if you don't like something, you can see that maybe it's like it doesn't have a logical structure or a compelling argument. And, you know, these are things on the checklist. So you can give more constructive feedback to the writer because you know what you're checking for, rather than you're just reading something and you like it or you don't like it.
Sure. And we can also see by client. So if our first drafts for a certain client are consistently falling down in a certain area, so there's not supporting information or something, then it can help us to shape the questions we ask on a briefing call, or to make sure that we, you know, we're particularly insistent in a certain area,
yeah,
to help our clients get better work from us. And, you know, in time, I hope that they'll pick up this scoring criteria and start using it in their feedback to us as well.
That would be great. And if there are any Radix clients listening, it would be great if you would like to use our checklist to give us feedback on our work.
Yeah, that would be that's slightly daunting, but also, you know, better than this reads well.
Yeah, absolutely. Or just no.
We do get no, do not, yes, like this. So if the listener is a marketer, not a copywriter, how is knowing the list that we're about to share, how's that going to help them?
So I think it's really helpful for people who, like me, are not great givers of constructive feedback. So if you want to give, if you're a marketer, you've probably got people that are submitting writing to you. You're using freelancers, or you're using an agency, or other people in your organization are writing, I don't know, blogs for you or something like that. You can use this to kind of check the quality of all of that work and give constructive feedback, which can save time and can be really helpful. And if you're, you know, you're a marketer and you're writing yourself, you're doing copywriting or content writing yourself, like you said, David, you can use this as a guide to what you should be including in your writing.
And I guess in that situation, you could share it with your own stakeholders in turn. If you know that the thing that's been created, whether you've done it or an agency has or whatever, is going to have to go out to, you know, your product experts or your sales team or whoever that might be. Hopefully it would help them guide their feedback to make it more constructive and holistic, rather than just, you can't start a sentence with but, or,
yes,
or something, where they feel like they need to say something, so they just start picking it apart based upon what they learnt at school.
Exactly, yes. No, it's a really helpful guide for anybody that's got to do any reviewing of any copy.
Yeah. Right then, shall we dive in?
Let's do it.
Okay, here is the paper. Listener, it is here. Here is the scoring criteria. Okay, so we have 5 tests. Accuracy, clarity, authority, empathy, and wizardry. Under each section, we ask 3 questions. You get a point if you satisfy the question. You don't get a point if you don't. And really, you're looking for 15 points for a really great piece of B2B content. So, accuracy. The 3 questions we have are, 1, is the copy free from factual errors? 2, is the copy free from typos, grammatical, and spelling errors? I'll come back to that in a moment. And 3, does this piece use the correct template, font, file naming convention, and are all the word count and character count limits adhered to? I will just say on point two, we do go into much more detail about how many typos are permissible,
acceptable
per 500 words.
And it's one.
Yeah, and that's before the review. It is not permissible for it to go out to the client like that. The idea there is that we set thresholds because typing is hard. We don't want to necessarily deduct points from people when their fingers hit the keys in the wrong order. Although, obviously, we check that internally before it goes.
Yes, and you know that's the whole point of having an internal review and proofing process, is that those things are weeded out before they go to the client.
So. Sure. Now, do you feel that, I mean, when a lot of people, you know, talk about, oh, they hear that you're a copywriter, you know, personally, for me, people think that I'm starting to judge their spelling and grammar all the time. And people think that this level one stuff is maybe sometimes what being a copywriter is.
Yeah, no, I'm not so sure. I think maybe some people think it's that. But you know, a lot of the clients and stakeholders that we deal with are looking at a much sort of deeper level than that. You know, have we explained the subject matter properly? Have we got the right tone of voice and all of that? So yeah, maybe some people stop at "you've started a sentence with and," or "you've spelled this wrong."
William Blake. All right. Yes. So this is, if you like, kind of the basement level. Like, this doesn't constitute great writing, but if you get this stuff wrong, it's going to undermine everything else.
Exactly.
Okay. So test B is clarity. Three questions here. Number one, does the copy have a logical structure that presents a compelling argument? Question two, is the point of the piece obvious from the start and throughout the narrative? And question three, is every sentence easy to read? This is something that actually we find quite hard, isn't it, Fiona?
Well, it is. And, you know, when you asked earlier, you know, had we got from this exercise what we wanted to get from it? Something that we got that I hadn't expected was, you know, we found out where we fall down. And one of the places where we seem to fall down when we apply this process is the question, is every sentence easy to read? And I think that's because, you know, if you're reviewing a 2,500-word ebook, every single sentence has to be easy to read. So if all sentences but one are easy to read, you fail this test. And so, you know, it is quite difficult to score highly here.
It's almost unfairly difficult. Yeah. But I think, I mean, we did word the question initially to be difficult to satisfy, because I think this is a particularly important thing in any area of B2B, particularly B2B tech copy that we write it, that people often making it easy to understand is the bit that they'll struggle with. That's the bit, probably, I think, more than anywhere else, why people come to a professional writer in this context. It's take all of this stuff and make it really clear, make it really, make the point really, really obvious. And so that's something where, yeah, we set the bar really crazy high. But the other thing I think is that if you're a professional writer, hopefully you have some talent, you know, and some experience in writing in a way that is easy and enjoyable to read. And it's very easy to just rely on that without focusing on it, without thinking about it. You know, that really, you know, hitting your sentence structure with a cricket bat to make sure that, you know, it does what it needs to do. You can just kind of go, well, yeah, you know, sentence structure is just something I do. You know, and I think having the test this hard makes it clear that you really need to focus on each sentence individually.
Absolutely. And you know, some of the subject matter that we're writing about is so complicated, and some of the ideas that we need to explain are so complicated that it is very, very hard to make every single sentence easy to read. And I say that from personal experience, because I got marked on something this morning and I fell down on that just this morning. I was really proud of that piece of work as well.
But is it better now that that's been pointed out to you?
Yes. But I think it was just the one sentence, and that sentence is now better.
Well, then it's worked.
It has worked, absolutely, yeah.
Okay, let's move on to test C, authority. Question one is there appropriate use of relevant jargon for the intended audience? Question two is, are claims supported by evidence and specific details? And question three, is the copy free from waffle, hyperbole, cliches, and overly formal language? Now, how do you achieve this without dumbing down? Is that the question?
Well, that's a very good question. So it's not about dumbing down, is it? So we're talking here about using relevant jargon for the audience. So there's a kind of trade-off there between using the relevant jargon and making every sentence easy to read that might, you might have an argument about dumbing down there, because I think what you need to do is make things very easy to read but include the right language for your audience. And that can be quite hard to pull off. The one about claims being supported by specific evidence, that's one where we find we fall down quite a bit. And that is often because the briefing that we've been given, I don't want to blame the client for everything, the briefing that we've been given or the materials that we've been given, there isn't supporting evidence to support what the client wants us to say. And so that's one that's actually helped us push back to the client and say, look, what evidence have we got to support that point?
Sure, because I think sometimes, unless, you know, someone, your copywriter or somebody, goes, okay, that's a good claim, how do you support it? Yeah. You know, where's that come from? If you're not careful, stuff can just get pushed through, and then it just doesn't have that specific backup to be credible. But unless somebody asks the question, no one would ever necessarily think about it.
Yeah. So it's prompted us to ask the question, and also, you know, to be really sure we're doing our desk research and, you know, finding out that evidence ourselves as well. So that it is sparing us to be better writers.
Yeah, I think, and it's about authority with your intended audience, isn't it? So a sentence that's easy to read but that includes industry specific technical jargon, for someone who works in that industry, will still be easy to read. And that's the tricky bit when you're reviewing.
Yes, and I think, you know, we were having this discussion this morning that, you know, some of our clients ask us to write this Flesh Kincaid reading score.
Oh yes.
And the minute you're including technical jargon in there, it fails that test.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's not a, yes, yeah, sort of. It's not a pass-fail test, but particularly where a client has set up, you need to get a particularly low Flesh Kincaid grade score.
Yeah, exactly.
And then you're writing about technical subjects. It looks at the language, and that naturally inflates that. But I think there is a place for that kind of thing. I know that's controversial among our colleagues, but to look at the aspects of it where how much you can simplify the non-technical bits, how much you could simplify the sentence structure, how much you can use one word instead of three sometimes, utilize or use, to or in order to, method or methodologies, and because I think that the thing that is difficult with this is the technical jargon can drag so much other complexity with it that isn't actually necessary, but because you're already using slightly technical, inflated, complex language, it can drag the rest of the stuff along.
Yes, and I think that, you know, for a really good example of how this is done well, if you read The Economist. So it uses a lot of, quite complex business and, economic language, but it couches it in very simple, easy-to-read sentences. And so it's like a really good masterclass in how to write like that, including that relevant jargon, but keeping your sentence structure simple.
Test D is empathy. Question one, is there evidence that the writer understands who the target audience is? Question two, does the piece avoid making assumptions about the audience? Question three, are the content and tone appropriate to the audience's interests, priorities, and knowledge level? Now, what surprised me is statistically, this is the part that we're best at, isn't it?
Yeah, that really surprised me as well.
Is that because the brief is really good, or that we know that we really need to ask the clients about this?
I think that we know that we need to ask the clients about it because we talk about it so much here. And it's like, you have to know, as a writer, you have to know who you're writing for. And, you know, quite often you get on the phone with a client and you're like, who do you want to appeal to with this, or who is this being written for? And they'll say, everyone, you know, it's just everyone.
Pretty much,
it's,
yeah.
it's C-level executives in all companies.
Yes.
And so I think, you know, we've learned to ask more specific questions to narrow that down. And I think that, you know, the collective experience that we have as a team, you know, you end up writing for, say, HR directors of mid-size companies in the retail industry quite a lot. And so when somebody else says, oh, you know, this piece of content is for HR directors of mid-sized companies in the retail industry, you've written for that audience before, and so you know, you've got that experience behind you. So I think that's maybe why we scored better here than I thought we were going to.
Yeah, and questions one and two kind of have that balance, don't they, of based upon kind of real research, real insight, understanding who the audience is and what they care about, but not going so far as to say, you know, as a CEO, you really hate your board, or, you know, or whatever it is, you know, without going so far as to make assumptions about the person's interests or attitudes based upon their role. You know, there's a really fine line there.
Yeah, it's an easy trap to fall into, like saying you know what they're thinking or you know what they're feeling. And when you know that you're being marked down for that with this checklist, you avoid that. And I think that, you know, that makes for better copy. I mean, you can say things like, you may be thinking or you may be feeling. It's a bit of an easy tweak to make when you recognise that that's what you're doing. It's quite easy to fix it.
You know, sometimes we hear people in the
yes.
C-suite,
yeah.
you know, get a nagging feeling about this. If that sounds familiar, this is for you.
Exactly,
you know,
yes. Yeah.
yeah, all of that stuff. Yeah. So the final test, test E, is wizardry. So question one, does the piece offer original insight and value to the reader? Question two, is it written in the client's voice? Question three, is it engaging and enjoyable to read? And is it likely to incite readers to action? These are quite different questions, Fiona. Which ones do you think are the most important?
So they're all important.
Everything
is equally important.
Yes.
this is the stuff that actually moves the needle,
yeah.
isn't it? Well, I don't know about, is it written in the client's tone of voice? I would almost have that further down the list. But
uh-huh.
but that is something that can be quite hard to pull off. I think, you know, we've got this in the wizardry section because this is... these are kind of quite refined skills that we've got here. So mastering the tone of voice of lots of different clients is quite difficult.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, does this piece offer original insight and value? I mean, that's what every content marketer is aiming for, surely. And so that's what we should be aiming for in every piece of content that we write. But very often we're not able to offer original insight and value because we haven't been given that original insight. Or there's not enough of an understanding of what the target audience will value that we're able to put that into our content. So that one scores low for those reasons, but that's something that we're also learning to push back on. And is it engaging and enjoyable to read, and is it likely to incite action?
We've kind of put
there's,
two
there's
together.
Two
there.
Different
they are
things
different.
There.
Yeah.
So when we come to refine this, I think we might have a look at that. But to me, the important thing there is it likely to incite action? Because that's what we're for. That's what we're here for. You know, that's our job, is to write copy, to write content that spurs somebody to take some positive action that the client wants them to take.
Yeah, I mean, that's why we're copywriters, even if we're creating long bits of content,
yes.
rather than just journalists or something. Well, I say just journalists. Journalists are very important, but it's a different job.
Yes, exactly. And, you know, and the action could be anything. It could be, yes, I want to have a demo, or yes, I want a salesperson to call me. But it could just be, oh, yes, I want to read this next bit of content. Or even, I want to read this next paragraph. You know, I want to keep reading this. Or, you know, I just want to find out more about this topic. But, you know, everything we write has to spur the reader to take some action that the client wants them to take.
Absolutely. And that's what this ultimately comes down to, isn't it? It isn't, do I like this piece of content? Mm. It's, will it work?
Yeah.
And I think that brings us back to the point of having an objective structure. So it's not just a subjective, would I have written it like that?
Yeah, yeah.
It goes beyond that.
Yeah, it's, will it achieve the objective?
So those are the 15 questions we've been running for the pilot. What do you think we might change about this list, or if anything, in future, Fiona?
Well, I definitely think we'll look at that last question because there are two different questions there. I don't know. Apart from that, I don't know if you have any thoughts about what you might change about it.
Yeah, I mean, I think we were talking about maybe adding some elements to it that are outside the writing itself, that kind of to do with the processes here and the service that we give clients. So, you know, just to make sure that we're measuring stuff being delivered on time or ahead of time, or, you know, where we had a really good briefing call or something, you know, other bits around the process, perhaps. So we're very happy, obviously, to share this with anybody who might want it. So if the listener wants to get hold of it and adapt it, Fiona, is that kind of okay for them to use it for their own purposes? And how can they get hold of it?
Absolutely. I don't know. How can they get hold of it? It's probably going to be in the notes.
We'll put a link in the show. Yeah, we'll put a link in the show notes. It's also, we have a blog post discussing it.
You can get in touch with us and ask us for it. And
sure.
Yeah.
And
if you do use it, do let us know how you got on with it and how you found it. We'd love to have some feedback from out there in the world.
Yeah, that would be great, just to see the use that that you've put it to, or any changes that you've made. That's all we have time for in this episode, believe it or not. I hope you've found it a useful departure, and that you'll be able to implement some of what we've talked about in your own work. Before we go, though, I'd like to thank everyone who came along to our webinar on 5 risks you should definitely take with your B2B content. It was a lot of fun to do, but don't worry if you couldn't make it. It is now available on demand. I'll put a link in the show notes and also on the Radix website. If you have any comments or thoughts on this episode or feedback on the scoring criteria, please do email us on podcast@radix-communications.com, or send us a voice memo if you like. It'd be good to get your voice on the show. Or you can find us on Twitter @radixcom. You can find more content online, or you can sign up for monthly copywriting tips at radix-communications.com/insights. Until next time, watch out for tie-ups.
Goodbye.
Bye.